The hideaway Tycho had found felt as if it were far below ground. The ceiling climbed up into a vault that had been finished to look as if it were part of a cavern, complete with stalactites that dripped with moisture. Gavin Darklighter seemed to be the only person who didn't mind getting wet. On Tatooine, I never even saw rain. For the others, the dripping water made their moods more foul. None was as foul as Corrin's when he saw Tycho Selku. Wedge pulled the younger man away from the others. "Do you want me to apologize for deceiving you, Corrin?" Corrin's green eyes flared. "You're my commanding officer. You don't need to explain yourself to me, sir. I'm glad to see Captain Selku was not killed at Nokavzor." "Corrin, I chose to keep Tycho's presence here a secret to safeguard him and to give us a weapon the other side knew nothing about. Wedge, I saw him talking with Kirtan Lure at the headquarters. Tycho said he was there to meet with a Duro gunrunner named Lainutka." Corrin's head came up. "When Zeka Thine was dying, he said Kirtan Lure knew we were on Coruscant before he pressed Thine into his service. There's a lying snake among us." Wedge frowned. "We've not seen Errol Numm since the warehouse. It's possible she was interrogated before Lure confronted Thine. Lure bluffed and Thine believed him." Corrin shook his head. "I worked with Lure for years, and the one thing I never saw him do was bluff." Wedge opened his hands. "Look, Corrin, I respect your instincts, I really do. But if Tycho had betrayed us, this place would have been hit too. And yes, the imps could be holding off for some other reason, but I can't think of one aside from their not knowing where we are." The others gathered around the table. In addition to the members of Rogue Squadron, the group included Aiella, Winter, Mirax, Iniri, Portha, and Aesir. Wedge leaned forward on the table. "Our basic problem is always the same. The shields have to come down. We took one shot at getting a computer override established, but that didn't work. What do we do now?" Winter raised a hand. "Things are not exactly the same. The loss of the memory cores means the central computer has begun to delegate jobs to the subsidiary systems. They've got a construction droid building a new manufacturing plant as an adjunct to the computer center to bring the memory core manufacturer under Imperial control. But it won't be able to turn out product for another 2 days." Wedge shivered. He'd seen construction droids work and found their efficiency as impressive as their potential for destruction. Huge machines, they combined the whole manufacturing cycle in one highly mobile package. The front end used lasers and other tools to dissect a structure. Little ancillary droids, some as big as a grav truck, sorted through the debris and fed the appropriate bits of material into the constructor's gullet. There, metal was re-smelted, stone ground down to dust and reconstituted, then extruded in girders, blocks, sheets, and trim. The aft end of the droid, following pre-programmed plans, created a new structure where the old one had been. Corrin frowned. "If I remember correctly, the subsidiary computer facilities are not as well guarded as the central computer. This makes them vulnerable to attack, right?" Wedge shook his head. "True, but we're only going to get a small portion of the shields down by using a computer. This world is too well defended for the Alliance to take it by storm." Gavin shot from his chair and clapped his hands together. "That's it! We take the world by storm!" Only the sound of dripping water violated the silence that greeted Gavin's remark. Everyone stared at him. Wedge encouraged the young pilot. "What are you talking about, Gavin?" "I'm talking about the storms we've seen here. A cloud comes up and a lightning storm hits." Corrin shook his head. "Conjuring a storm up isn't that easy, Gavin." "No, Corrin, it is. My uncle on Tatooine is a food magnate who has a virtual monopoly on water rights and moisture farms. Hundreds of people have come to him with schemes to bring rain to Tatooine. One guy had a plan to seed the atmosphere with chemical crystals around which water would condense and form rain clouds." Wedge straightened up. "Doesn't that presuppose there is sufficient water vapor already in the air? Aside from this place, Coruscant seems rather lacking in humidity. Pash nodded at Ayela. And when there is some, a storm forms almost instantly, like the one we saw at the museum. Corin smiled. Perhaps we could get everyone in the Black Sun and Alien Combine to put a pot on to boil at the same time. Everyone laughed except for Winter. Boiling is a good idea, but we need a lot of water to boil at one time. On Coruscant, water from the polar glaciers is pumped through long aqueducts to reservoirs throughout the city. There's plenty of water in any one of those reservoirs. Wedge scratched his head. But how do we vaporize it? We need a lot of heat, but we need it delivered all at once. Aesir smiled proudly. I've got it. We use one of the orbital mirrors. They're designed to concentrate sunlight and deliver it to the planet to warm up the colder regions. We refocus one of them on a reservoir, and it'll vaporize the duracrete, the transparasteel, and the water in short order. Wedge's eyes narrowed. So water vapor will condense into a monster storm that will strike with lightning all over the place, taking down the power grid. The weak link here, as I see it, is taking the mirror control station. Do we have enough people to assault it and do what needs to be done without interference? Wedge looked around the table. Mr. Horn, you have an idea? Corin leaned forward, resting his elbows on the table. There's a construction droid building a factory within a laser shot from the nearest subsidiary computer center, right? We get a crew in to take control of the factory and have it go rogue. It heads straight for the computer center. I don't think anyone is going to remain on station while a Death Star's little brother comes toward him, gobbling up cityscape. It stops short of destroying the center, but our crew should be able to get in and use the distraction to get to work on the orbital mirror. Moreover, we can program the construction droid to spit out a new central computer facility with some of our own code sliced into it. If we take the planet, we'll be up and running even if the imps blow the old center. Wedge nodded. I see it. Imtray, do you know how to run a construction droid? The droid's head came up. I have had some experience with smaller manufacturing systems, sir, so I believe I can determine what we need to do. Mirax raised a hand. I've used one of the small ones to fabricate some storage areas for my father. Count me in on that crew. Right. Wedge felt a twinge of pain in his ribs. With broken ribs, I'm not flight ready. So I'll go on that one, too. Ayela? I'm with you. Winter, you're the best slicer we've got here, so you've got to go into the center. Tycho, Gavin, and Ural, you'll round out that crew. Corin looked up at Wedge. What about the rest of us? Tycho has procured 6 headhunters. Corin, you'll fly with Arisi on your wing. Rizzati and Pash will fly together, and... He looked over at Sheel, who was wounded. Nuara, you might have to fly alone. Aesir raised her hand. Commander Antilles, I'm combat qualified in a headhunter.
Excuse me?
The Bothan looked down sheepishly. You know me as Aesir Salar, but what you don't know is that I'm a graduate of the Bothan Martial Academy. I can handle the fighter. Wedge raised an eyebrow. What would a member of the Bothan military be doing here on Coruscant? I'd rather not say, sir.
I can understand that, Wedge nodded. Well then, you've got number 6 with Nuara in 5.
The Twi'lek shook his head and Wedge noticed that his normally ash-colored flesh had taken on a creamy tone that, in some places, seemed translucent.
I think I'm coming down 6, sir.
Iniri bit her lower lip. I'm not formally qualified to fly, but I've done a lot of simming. Lu Jane used to train against me. She was better than I was and beat me regularly, but not all the time. Wedge was tempted to take her up on her offer, but he held back. I believe what you say, Iniri, but I can't take responsibility for your first starfighter combat taking place on Coruscant. What I'd rather have you do is deliver Winter and the others to the computer center. Gavin slowly shook his head. 14 against a world. Those are long odds. Corin Horn tightened the straps on his life support controller, centering the boxy device on his chest. Mirax came walking over in a black Imperial uniform, but succeeded in forestalling his dread by giving him a big smile.
Take care of yourself out there.
Hey, my job is keeping ties off you. He kissed her, then looked up and saw Wedge heading over to the black airspeeder Imtray was to use to get them to the construction droid.
You better get going.
She touched his hand.
The Force be with you.
And with you. Corin smiled as she ran off. Then he turned and found himself face to face with Tycho Selku.
Captain?
Tycho nodded briefly.
I'm glad you'll be flying the black and gold headhunter. I think it's the best of the lot, which is why I used it the other day. I know I can trust you to bring it back in one piece.
I'll do my best, sir. Corin refused to look him in the eye.
If you will excuse me, sir.
Tycho blocked his path.
No, wait a minute. I want you to know you're wrong about me. I'm not working for the imps.
Corin exhaled slowly.
Captain, Wedge has asked me to let it go, and so I will, for now. But there are too many odd things here to make me leave it alone forever.
Such as?
Such as your being here when Alliance Intelligence thinks you're buried in rubble on Nokvzor. Such as my seeing you here with an agent of Imperial Intelligence. Such as your vacation at Lusankia.
Muscles bunched at the corners of Corin's jaw.
Such as Bror Jace being ambushed and killed by Imperials after you obtained permission for him to travel and plotted his course for him.
Tycho's face slackened slightly.
But that's all circumstantial. Nothing is proven.
Corin looked him square in the face.
Nothing's proven yet. The fact that there's no solid evidence against you just means you're real good.
The other man's blue eyes sharpened.
Or, Lieutenant Horn, it means I've left no evidence because I'm completely innocent.
I guess we'll see about that, Captain Selku. But when I return, I'm going to make ferreting out the spy in our midst a hobby. I'm good at that sort of thing. Very good.
Tycho opened his hands.
And you're honest, so I know I have nothing to fear.
Tycho gave Corin a nod, then walked off.
Let's go, rogues! Our people will be in position inside 15 minutes, which means our prey will show up shortly thereafter. Shoot straight and fly fast!
On the landing surface behind the construction droid's control center, Wedge, disguised as he had been upon arrival on Coruscant, shouted at the workmen to be heard over the din.
I'm Colonel Antar Roat, and these are my aides. I have come for a safety inspection.
The workmen led them to a small foyer just outside the command center. Cutting the noise of the huge droid to almost nothing, the man turned to go.
I don't know anything about that. I should check with...
Wedge crashed his hand down on the back of the man's head, dropping him to the ground. Ayella immediately turned to the interior door while Mirax let Imtray into the foyer. Brandishing their weapons at the trio of men lounging at a hologame table, they burst into the command center. Mirax pointed her blaster at the men.
Lie down on the floor and no one gets hurt.
They obeyed and Ayella used synthetic binders to tie their hands and legs. Imtray settled himself at a command console and executed a 90-degree turn toward the south. Wedge joined him in time to make out, between two stocky office towers, the squat form of the subsidiary computer center number 4, their destination.
Right on target.
The buildings in their path came alive with lights as all manner of speeders fled from the huge droid bearing down on them. The console's comm unit crackled.
Construction droid 469, do you have a problem? We're showing a deviation of your course.
Wedge hit the reply button.
No problem here. With Coruscant under new management, we wanted to get things started early.
What are you talking about? Who is this?
Rogue Squadron Contracting. X-Wings are faster, but they don't build things as nicely as this does. Antilles out.
Captain Uwilla Ilor of the New Republic Interdictor Cruiser Karuska Rainbow glanced at the chronographic display built into the arm of her command chair, then up at the holographic representation of Coruscant hovering in the middle of the bridge. There were only 20 standard minutes left before the Rebel fleet would be within range for her to pull them from hyperspace.
The situation was desperate enough that Admiral Akbar had said even a partial shield failure would be sufficient to let the fleet continue on in, provided Captain Ailor felt the shield outage was significant. Lieutenant Jamidi, Herman Calamari first officer, held a datapad out for her inspection.
Projector crews have run full system diagnostics on their equipment, and we are ready to power up when you give the word.
She glanced at the times appended to each diagnostics run.
The crew is slow. We can't have that.
The Mon Calamari opened his mouth in a smile.
Few believe we'll be activating the gravity well projectors, Captain.
Ailor raised an eyebrow.
And why is that, Lieutenant?
Jamidi hesitated for a moment.
Rumor has it that the people we have on the ground are Rogue Squadron.
Subsidiary Computer Center Number 4 had been abandoned in haste as the construction droid headed toward it, but the computers were humming smoothly when Gavin, Winter, Ural, Iniri, and Tycho ran in. Gavin kept watch as Winter bent over the computer. She was the key to their success because the datapad she held contained the code that would direct an orbital mirror toward the nearest water distribution plant and reservoir. Suddenly, Winter's datapad beeped.
Sith spawn. They flooded the control room with gas. Looks like Vex M3D.
Gavin jerked a thumb at the door.
On the wall. There's a case with breather masks in it. If we could get in, we could get them. That's the big if. The case is coded. By the time a sequencer got it open, you'd have to breathe and you'd be down.
His hand on the stick of the sleek black and gold Z-95 Headhunter, cruising through the Dura Creek canyons of Coruscant, Corran Horn felt more alive and free than all the soaring hawk bats on the planet. He glanced down at his sensor display.
Hunt leader here. I have 12 starfighters coming in on the droid.
He started the Z-95 climbing. A quartet of TIE starfighters came after him. But before they could close to range and start shooting, he dove back in the direction from which they had come. Then he swooped out in a long glide that brought him in over the construction droid and into the rest of the TIEs. He spitted the leader on his targeting crosshairs and gave it two bursts of blaster fire. It slammed into a tower and exploded. The pilot of the next TIE tried to pull up and away at the last second. His port wing clipped the corner of the tower and sent the TIE into a corkscrew spin that ended in a fiery explosion deep in a canyon. Corran pointed the fighter's nose straight at the bottom of the urban trench and started down. Two TIEs dove after him and closed fast. Corran rolled the headhunter 90 degrees to port. One eyeball pilot made a serious mistake by not rolling before he tried to follow. The TIE's hexagonal panel snapped, with the top half shearing through the ship's ball cockpit. Another TIE pilot rolled first, then swooped in after Corran's headhunter. But the turn went wide, and the TIE plowed into one of the city's covered walkways. Corran brought the fighter around and looked at the fires burning in his wake.
Not a bad start. Four down, but it's only a start.
Wedge's comlink buzzed.
Tycho here. We have a problem. We need M-Tray now.
I copy.
He looked up at Mirax. If we can leave this thing alone, they need us in the computer center. Mirax held her hands up.
The droid will stop at the outer edge of the computer center. Let's go.
Ayala led the way back into the entryway. She started to push the door open, then quickly ducked back. A spray of blaster bolts dotted the wall with burn marks. Wedge ran over to where she sat on the floor.
What was that?
Given the size of those burn marks, I'd say some stormtroopers have an E-Web heavy blaster set up on one of those towers. They've got the door covered and covered well.
Gavin's stomach began to fold in on itself as he heard Wedge's next report from the comlink.
Sorry, Tycho. We're pinned down here. Unless we get some help, we're going nowhere.
I copy, Wedge.
Tycho looked over at Gavin.
You and I will go see if we can help them out.
Ural raised a three-fingered hand.
Ural wants to know how this Fex M3D works.
Winter, still bent over the computer, slowly straightened up.
If you get a strong enough dose, your autonomic nervous system shuts down and you suffocate.
The Gan's eyes widened.
Ural does not respire.
Aniri blinked.
What?
Ural tapped his chest.
Gans do not respire. Ural's body has a muscular gas bladder that allows Ural to draw in gases and expel them through exoskeleton. Fex M3D will not affect Ural.
Tycho thought for a moment. Here's what we'll do. Tycho, Aniri, Winter, and Gavin ran for the airspeeder and sealed themselves in. All around them, they could see the battle raging. TIE fighters swooped and dove. Green laser bolts flashed through the sky. Countless burn marks scored the construction droid, yet it loomed ever larger as it approached. Winter twisted around in the seat.
Ural's in.
Gavin turned to look. The case with the masks was open. By now, a greenish-yellow mist was carpeting the hallway. Aniri turned the airspeeder so its exhaust pushed the gas down to the opposite end of the hallway. A thump on the roof of the airspeeder made Gavin jump. The Gan stood outside holding up four masks.
Ural has been successful.
Tycho reached forward from the back seat and patted Gavin on the shoulder.
Ready to go?
Gavin pulled his mask on.
I'm set, Tycho. Come on, then. Let's go make it rain.
As Corrin's headhunter came up through the towers, he caught Wedge's message to Tycho. Hunter, lead here, Commander. You got a problem?
Seems so, Corrin. Tower east of us has an E-Web trained on us. The building should be evacuated except for troops. Get them gone.
As ordered. Stand by. Corrin extended his loop and let it take him around the computer center. He dove and leveled out, coming in on the tower while running parallel to the construction droid's course. He could see the lines of heavy blaster fire lancing out at the droid from the nearby tower. Corrin let loose with a quick burst of fire, raking it across the side of the building. He switched his weapons control over to concussion missiles, linked two, then climbed up over the construction droid's blocky outline. His crosshair settled on the cylindrical tower where the red stream directed against the construction droid originated. When he hit the trigger, two blue missiles streaked out and hit dead on target. Gavin had positioned himself so he could watch the door and still see what Winter was doing. Once they'd gotten into the computer room, she'd plugged her datapad into the console and very quickly had a representation of Coruscant floating above her workstation. Her fingers flew over the keys, and small cubes floated around the world arranged in three rings. One circled the equator, while the other two split the distance between the equator and the poles. She pointed to a glowing red dot riding just above the equator.
These are the orbital solar energy transfer satellites. This is our target. It's night here now, but several orbital mirrors are high enough to give us what we need. First step is to adjust the mirror so that it turns opaque. Then we focus it here and start it reflecting again.
Tycho stood behind her and rested his hands on her shoulders.
Go to it. This world needs a bath, so start boiling the water.
After flying an escort for Wedge from the construction droid to the computer center, Corrin leveled out and began a slow loop to the east. Suddenly, a golden dagger of sunlight stabbed down through the night onto an ostentatious building fitted with columns and a cascade of broad steps. The building grew in brilliance until it shone like a beacon. Then it began to melt. Window casings began to smoke and glow. Then the pressure from the superheated air inside the building blew them out. Pennants flying from the top of the building burst into flame. The roof rose up volcanically. Then an explosion shook the building. The first silvery lightning bolt slashed down at the Imperial Palace. Corrin keyed his comm unit.
I hope you can hear me, Wedge. You've got one fantastic storm brewing out here.
Wedge came around the corner and into the computer center. How are things going?
Tycho looked over at him while Winter typed furiously on her datapad.
Good and bad. The storm is fierce enough that skyhooks are detaching and the inner shields have come down. Unfortunately, it appears their collapse has resulted in a shift of resource allocation programs within the computers.
Wedge frowned. You're telling me that the destruction of one layer of shields has diverted power through backup systems to the remaining shields? Winter nodded. The main shield isn't coming down. Her fingers played quickly over the datapad's input surface, and golden pinpoints of power started to dot the grid map. Tycho pointed to a solid cluster that appeared to be the hub from which many gold spokes spread.
That's likely a substation. It looks invulnerable to lightning. So much for our plan.
Wedge shook his head.
The grounding that will protect it from lightning won't help it against missiles.
Tycho looked at him.
You're going to send someone in at that target with a storm raging above it?
Right. Wedge slapped Tycho on the back. There's no pilot I know of who can outfly lightning, but I'd sooner bet on Korenhorn than against him.
Korin brought his fighter around on the heading Winter gave him.
You want me to fly into that?
6 kilometers away, the lightning came in sheets.
It's very ugly over there,
Wedge responded.
I copy, Korin, but it's got to be done. You have 4 minutes.
Korin took the fighter into a dive and came out of the urban maze 2 kilometers from his target. Rain lashed his fighter. It shook the ship so hard that it wasn't until he saw his shield indicator go from green to yellow that he realized someone was shooting at him. A glance at his aft monitor showed 2 interceptors coming up on his tail. Rolling violently, he bounced his fighter over a crumbling skywalk between buildings. Behind him, something exploded, and his aft sensor indicated he only had 1 squint on his tail. A pair of near misses, with green bolts shooting past his starboard S-foil, told him that the imp pilot behind him was good. He pulled a hard turn around the corner of a building, then rolled 180 degrees and cut back around another. The figure-eight maneuver got rid of his pursuit for the moment, so he came back around and set up to make his run on the target. The lightning strike silhouetted darkened towers, helping him steer around trouble. Turbulence in the air bounced him around. More laser blasts shot past. He rolled left, then right, then left again, and came up behind the interceptor and fired. The blaster bolts clipped the starboard wing. The enemy ship rolled right and got out of his line of fire. Korin could have followed him, but he'd closed on his target, so he switched over to concussion missiles. He rolled and dove in on the target. He dropped the targeting box on what appeared to be the base of a massive obelisk honoring the Emperor and let fly. The concussion missile hit the base of the statue. It exploded, casting rock in all directions, but he saw no secondary explosions. Wedge stared at the map. The lights on the image didn't go out.
What happened? He hit it, didn't he?
Winter nodded.
Right on target, but not enough power. Another shot or two should do it.
Tycho shook his head.
It better just be one more shot, because that's all he's got.
Wedge pointed to a green interceptor icon coming in and around toward Korin's red headhunter icon.
Provided he gets one more shot.
Can't you do something about that squint, Winter?
She looked up at him.
That squint gave us our data on the missile hit.
You really want us to be blind out there?
No, of course not.
Wedge looked down for a moment, then grinned.
You're getting data feeds from him, right? I've got an idea. Tap into Coruscant Traffic Control and get the taxi, hangar, and maintenance program set up with his numbers.
Wedge keyed his comlink.
Korin, listen to me. Your first hit was good, but you need to pack more into the next one. Here's the plan.
Korin listened.
I copy, Wedge. Corrin unconsciously pressed his hand to his throat, but his medallion wasn't there. It could have compromised the undercover operation, so he had left it in Whistler's keeping. Coming around on another attack vector against the target, Corrin let the squint drift onto his tail. Laser bolts played all around him. With a flick of his thumb, he shunted all forward shield energy to the rear shields. Then he rolled 90 degrees to the left. He remained diving in at the target, but was ready to pull out at the last minute. Control. 3, 2, 1. He hit the trigger, then pulled back on the stick for all he was worth. Missile away. Corrin's missile sailed in at the target. The targeting computer built into the missile took sensor readings, compared the coordinates they supplied with those of the target, determined if it should explode yet, and reported the whole process back to Corrin's headhunter. The headhunter, in turn, sent that information on to Winter's datapad. There it remained for a nanosecond, then flowed into the Imperial computer network. It routed itself through several key systems, and finally poured into Coruscant traffic control. The data then fed into the taxi, hangar, and maintenance programming, which, because of the override Winter had provided, sent it back out to the Imperial Interceptor, closing on the headhunter. In this case, the course supplied to the Interceptor on Corrin's tail was the course the missile was traveling. The concussion missile caromed off the edge of the breach its predecessor had opened and exploded. Power died in several buildings for a second, but other lines accepted more power and the shields remained intact. Then the Interceptor hit. The hull sheared through the power conduit, severing the thick bundle of cables running through it, and the ensuing explosion tangled and fused lines that should never have touched. Outside Corrin's cockpit, Coruscant went black. On Captain Ilor's interdictor, the countdown neared the end.
Look!
Her eyes came up off the chronometer. The last shield sphere flickered. The shield sphere died. Captain Ilor looked out toward the planet, sparkling like a star in the distance. Kill the projectors, Jamiti. Now the battle for Coruscant begins. On Home One's bridge, chaos reigned. Hundreds of voices competed with one another, each filled with urgency. Admiral Akbar sat at the center of it, listening intently to comm feeds from his group commanders. The two Imperial Star Destroyers entering the battle were the Triumph and the Monarch. Already the Alliance ships Emancipator and Liberator had begun pounding them. Triumph's shields had collapsed on one side. Though the Triumph's difficulties heartened Akbar, the Golan space defense platform off the port stern sickened him. It had engaged many of the smaller ships in the fleet and was hammering them mercilessly. He looked up at the Quarren who had just appeared beside his command chair.
What is it, Commander Sirlaw? Something about the station?
Perhaps. She pointed out the portside viewport. The mirror is moving.
Why would it...
Before Sirlaw could answer, the mirror's panel swung and locked into reflected position. The reflected light appeared as a bright dot on the edge of the Golan 3 station. Silvery lines, like cracks forming in ice, began to appear at the edges of the platform. The solar beam stabbed deeper and deeper, igniting each bulkhead, then beginning on another, burning from one end of the station to another. Akbar looked up.
When the platform stops shooting, send the Devonian and Ryloth over there. I want our people to land on that station to assess it and help those who have survived.
Corrin glanced at the fuel indicator on his command console as Wedge's voice came over his comm.
Corrin, Winter shows no activity in your vicinity, and we look pretty secure here, too. Head in and hurry back.
Will do, Wedge. Horn out. He started to bring the headhunter around to the hangar, but he saw an anomalous blip on his sensor screen. He initiated an identification program, but the contact faded and returned, depriving the computer of enough solid data to make a match. Pash, what have you got for a contact at 352.4 degrees?
Nothing. Do you have something?
Yeah, but it's weird. Probably a storm ghost. I'm going to check it out.
Want a wing? I can abort my approach.
Negative. I'm just doing a flyby. One pass, then I'm in.
The rebels had expected two or three times more Star Destroyers than had appeared to defend Coruscant. That only the Triumph and Monarch remained to oppose them surprised Admiral Akbar, because neither ship had a particularly illustrious reputation or crew. At Akbar's signal, another Mon Calamari heavy cruiser, Mon Ramonda, turned from its position in line behind Home One and pointed its bow towards Coruscant. It surged forward, cutting across the Imperial Star Destroyer's line of flight, and began to pour fire on Triumph. The Star Destroyer had already lost its shields, so the turbo laser strikes played easily up over the spine of the ship. Even more devastating were the hits by the cruiser's ion cannons. Explosions trailed in the blue lightning's wake. At the same time, the Umbrella Force began to separate. Assault frigates began to close a net around the two Imperial warships and their smaller support ships. There were so many of them that the Imperial gunners could not target all of them. Starfighters and troop carriers began their runs to the planet. The outcome of the battle in space was important, but without troops on the ground to secure the facilities and impose order, Coruscant would remain unconquered. Commander Cyrlil approached Akbar. Captain Averin of Monarch has sent a truce bite out to everyone.
He will surrender unconditionally?
If there are conditions, they will be insignificant. Akbar nodded.
Conduct the negotiations.
Wedge had Winter bring back up the Palace District tactical map.
Corrin, we're getting nothing on this contact you report.
Contact is weak, Wedge. It oscillates back and forth as if running between buildings. The computer can't make any sense of it. Wait a minute.
What's going on, Corrin?
I've lost throttle control. I'm speeding up.
The green arrow representing Corrin's headhunter began a slow dip toward the planet. Wedge stared at the data scrolling across the screen.
What's happening?
Near panic flooded through the comlink from Corrin.
Manual override is not working.
Punch out, Corrin. Eject.
Can't. Inverting. Nothing I can do.
Static filled the comlink channel as the green arrow dropped from sight. Wedge listened to the echoes of the explosion rumble as the holographic image of the building Corrin's headhunter had hit slowly collapsed. Wedge Antilles stared at the hill of debris that rose less than 7 meters above the level upon which he stood. All the rest of the falling stories had telescoped into the floors below. And somewhere in there are the mortal remains of Corrin Horn. Wedge shook his head. Because of the efforts of his people, Coruscant had not been drenched in blood. In fact, aside from the casualties in the space battle and limited actions on the planet, virtually no one had been injured. People all around had gone berserk with joy when Coruscant fell. Even he had celebrated. Errol Nunn had been found alive and nearly well in Invisic, but her return did not cancel the pain of Corrin's loss, especially with Mirax Tarek wandering around as if her heart had been torn out, and Aiella Wissiri not much better off. While Wedge pointed to Corrin's death as the wellspring of his anxiety, he knew he did so because he did not want to consider the question that every member of the rebel staff had been asking themselves. Why hadn't it been harder? The inescapable conclusion that could be drawn from the utterly inept defense of Coruscant was that Yasani Isard wanted the New Republic to take the world. Already rumors of a plague spreading through Invisic were flying thick and fast. Nawara Vin and Riv Shiel had undergone Bacta therapy and were recovering. What little General Kraken had told him about Errol Numb's debriefing suggested the virus might have been created by the Empire specifically to leave Coruscant a charnel house. But the Conquest had aborted that plan. Virus had been found in the water supply, though Rogue Squadron's boil-off might have killed a vast quantity of it. Wedge heard footsteps behind him and, expecting to see Tycho and Winter, was surprised when he saw General Kraken and Pash. The elder Kraken spoke solemnly.
"There's been some headway in the investigation of what happened to Lieutenant Horn."
Wedge smiled. "This is good news. If you don't mind waiting a minute or two, I know Tycho will want to hear this, and it will save you telling it again." He glanced at his chronometer. "He should be here momentarily." Aaron Kraken shook his head.
"I'm afraid he won't be joining you. He's been arrested for treason and the murder of Corin Horn."
Wedge stared at the head of Alliance Intelligence.
"What? That's impossible."
General Kraken held a hand up.
"Commander, we believe he disabled the manual override and gave his masters the command code for the headhunter. What you did with that interceptor, they did with Horn's headhunter."
If there was a part of him that didn't hurt, Corin Horn couldn't name it. He could feel the binders holding his arms at the small of his back, constantly pulling his elbows closer together. They sheathed his arms in metal from fingertips to elbows and were the kind of restraints that had been outlawed for Corsac's use. He found himself lying on his stomach in the dark on a thin cot. He was naked and the room was chilly. A weak, barely noticeable vibration ran through the cot, producing a low hum, suggesting that he was on a starship heading through hyperspace. Corin found his thoughts wandering, which made him think that he'd been drugged. That sensation, along with the binders, his nakedness, and the darkness, led him to the inescapable conclusion that he'd been captured by the Empire. Suddenly, lights flashed on brilliantly, stabbing forked pain into his brain. Yasani Isard's first words came cold and even, tinted with just a hint of curiosity.
"I would have expected you to be more formidable somehow."
"Clothes make the man," he said. At least he thought he said it.
"Ah, the infamous Horn wit."
Corin opened his eyes wider and shuffled on his knees to face her.
"I left most of it back on Free Coruscant."
She brought her hands up and clapped gently.
"I'm amazed a man in your condition can make jokes."
She squatted down and caught him across the face with an open-handed slap.
"I'm amazed a man in your situation would make jokes."
Corin brought his head up despite the pain. "Tycho Selku gave you the codes for my ship. That's how you got me." Her eyes narrowed.
"Oh, well done, Horn, well done. I would deny this, of course, but the latest word from Imperial Center is that Tycho Selku has been arrested by Alliance Intelligence on charges of treason and murder. Specifically, your murder."
"Hardly an injustice given the circumstances."
"Perhaps not, but I will find a way to use it. I will return you to them after they have convicted and executed him. His wrongful death will gnaw away at consciences and undercut the rebellion's illusion of moral superiority."
"I'll tell them the truth."
"The only truth you'll know is the truth I give you."
Isard smiled cruelly.
"We are bound to Lusankia, my private workshop for people like you. By the time I am finished with you, your mind will be mine, and your heart's desire will be what I wish."
Corin shook his head violently.
"I will never betray my friends."
She laughed again. "I have heard this chorus many times before, and it always sounds so sweet. You will betray them, Corin Horn.
When I am through with you, you will become the instrument of the Emperor's vengeance, and nothing and no one will be able to stop you."
This is Henry Thomas. We hope you've enjoyed this production of Wedge's Gamble by Michael A. Stackpole. This program was produced by David Rapkin and directed by Kathy Kauser. Mixed directed by Lars Howell. Abridgment by Trebby Johnson. Wedge's Gamble is a production of Lucasfilm Limited. Copyright 1996, all rights reserved.